What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Dynasty Rankings Podcast. I'm your host, Nate List. You can find me on Twitter at An Outraged Jew. And of course, with me is Alexander McKenzie. You can find him on Twitter at Jacked Up on Mountain Dew. Now, guys, I may sound more energized than usual, and that's because Alexander and I have been doing a one-hour pre-show that had absolutely nothing to do with the show sheet and everything to do with connectivity issues. So for those of you guys that are enjoying this video feed, shout outs to Alexander for getting it worked out on his end so that we could get this show going. Fingers crossed, Alexander.
Fingers crossed. If I freeze like a robot, hopefully it freezes and it gives me like, I have a good picture. So hopefully nobody screenshots these and, you know, trolls me on Twitter. So
yeah, no,
that's what I'm hoping for here.
That's a fair point. If you're gonna freeze, you don't want to freeze in the most donkiest of faces. So we're gonna.
I definitely should just try to smolder the entire time, just to ensure that I don't, you know, that every time I'm freezing, I'm looking good.
You know, if you could smush your face into the most like Brad Pitt like esque facial.
I'll try to increase my jaw size here in about the next 5 minutes, so I can just have that, you know, that, you know, Giga Chad type look. Oh, look, it froze there. There we go.
No, it didn't.
It's just a little mini fresh.
Every time you guys hear Alexander get garbled, go ahead and take a drink. And every time my light goes out in the back here, take a drink. That's if you guys are really looking to spice up your experience, that's what you do. All right. So Alexander, listen, you and I, we had a lot of conversation back and forth this weekend. Obviously, there's some trends that are continuing out there with players that people are not necessarily losing faith in, but starting to question, like, how are these outcomes taking place on the field, from quarterbacks to wide receivers to a multitude of players. So you and I are going to hit three players right off the top. One of them that I think people have questions about, but I would say the level of concern is not very high considering how talented this player is. And then we have two players, both rookies. One is tearing up the NFL. The other is a tight end who's also playing very well right now. And then at the end of this episode, we've got five buys that we think you guys need to focus on in your dynasty leagues. And I will tell you right now, this list is consistent of a quarterback that could very easily be in the running for the QB1 overall in any given year when things break right. And he's well outside the top 10 currently in most consensus rankings. So that's a teaser. But let's start right at the top. One of the big topics that we wanted to get into this week was what we've seen from Joe Burrow over the first handful of weeks of the 2023 NFL season. Clearly, for many of you that bought Burrow and invested in Burrow in fantasy and dynasty, you did not expect to get a guy whose yards per attempt are at a mega career low. Completion percentage, which was a hallmark of Joe Burrow, at a significant decrease from years prior. He's averaging almost a third of the fantasy points that he averaged last year, just slightly more than that at 8.4 fantasy points per game. Alexander, can we explain how this is happening? And from a dynasty standpoint, is there any real concern that should be taken at this point?
I think for dynasty, it's not that. Oh, here we go. The dynasty is not that problem. A guy, you know, is truly elite at the position, right? Top five in this, and on any given Sunday, I think really is what the problem is his calf injury seems to potentially be, you know, giving him issues with mobility and being able to move out of the pocket. You look at these elite guys like Justin Herbert, you look at Mahomes, especially, and then Allen, what separates the guys at the top from the bottom are the mobility. And the problem is if this calf injury right now is limiting him and he has to stay in the pocket and he can't move out and extend plays or at least be able to move in the pocket and just shift around from rushers, it's affecting his just the pass rush is coming to. You know, week one, it's like a 45% completion percentage. And we looked at guys in the past who have these calf injuries. There really, in the last like 3 years, there really hasn't been too many, especially to the quarterback position. The two of note had been Jimmy G in 2021 and Dak Prescott in 2021, both of which I don't think really had. I think Jimmy had stepped out And his fantasy points really actually post-injury, I think he had missed one game and he slightly increased from post-injury from 14.4 fantasy points to 15.4. And then his average passing yards also increased. So, and again, it's whatever the specific type of calf injury is going on, that could be a thing. But, you know, Dak Prescott may be a better example. He had a calf injury week 8, 2021. His passing yards dropped by 40 yards per game after he had gone. He was passing for like 300 yards a game and then went down to 263. But his fantasy points really kind of went down maybe 2 points from 21 to 19. I think maybe it's time to rest this. He doesn't take as nearly as many hits and he's smart in the pocket as my face freezes. And he gets better at this. I think really we could see things get better. I was looking at, you know, Higgins and Chase and their usage, and Higgins is literally second to last in catch percentage, right next to Chase Claypool right now. So the supporting cast is really not helping them too much. I think Chase had done really well in that game against the Rams to uplift them. But if Burrow can't move around and this calf injury does not get better, I mean, we're looking at a potential, like, it might be the best team to let him rest for a time. but yeah, as long as if they can move him, if they can move him around later on in the season, I think he can do better. But as of right now, I'm just slightly concerned. I really would, as a dynasty owner, would probably want him to sit out. It's the best interest for the team if they continue to lose, and it might potentially be a lost season, to kind of let him rest and not let this be a lingering issue throughout his career.
Boy. Well, okay. The first thing I want to do, I want to see if I can migrate this screen. So as I'm doing this, I'm going to do what we in the business call filibustering. and I think I can hear you currently. So let's see if I can get this screen back to where it should be. Video source, Alexander, boom. Now you're back in there. And then I see this thing. Give me 1 second to the good listeners of this audience. This is just what happens, okay? There's not much I can do about this right now. All right, so we're back. On the Joe Burrow topic, I pulled up some trades here if we wanted to talk about those. But on the subject of Joe Burrow, it's really interesting because, yeah, he's got the injury, and there's a couple things at play right now. When you look at Burrow, currently he's the QB7 on keep trade cut as of yesterday. ESPN Stats and Info dropped a really like ridiculous stat about Joe Burrow that kind of blew me away. It says Joe Burrow is the first quarterback in NFL history to attempt at least 150 passes in his team's first 4 games of the season and average fewer than 5 yards per attempt on those passes. That is a statement that we never thought we would hear about Joe Burrow. And I want to dive deep into some of the metrics right now that do support what's going on with Joe Burrow. But before I do, let's do this.
Season, do you feel like you've had less time to create space for yourself?
Nah, I'm open. I'm always open. Excuse my profanity. I'm sorry.
What has to happen for you to be able to capitalize on that more so than maybe today, for example, or other games this year?
I can't do nothing, man. I can't do nothing than what I'm already doing. If I'm open, I'm open. You know, at the end of the day, I can't do nothing, but what can I do? If I'm open, I'm open. You know what I'm saying? So
basically, and let me pop you back in here. I don't know what's going on. So basically, Ja'Marr Chase has a post-game interview, and he basically says, hey, I'm always fucking open, man. Like, I don't know what to tell you. And, you know, PFF does support this grade. When you look at PFF currently and you look at how these players are being graded, we could swing over there. Ja'Marr Chase is the guy that's playing well. It's T. Higgins that actually hasn't been playing quite as well this year. But what I wanted to bring up is this year, Joe Burrow, QB19 in allowed pressures per dropback. Okay, so middle of the road, 38 of those. That's 22 less than Kenny Pickett, who's constantly under duress. His rate of pressure drop. Really? You see this fucking balloon on the screen? Did I freeze now?
I think you know it's Halloween season, right? So we have to have our guest Casper come in here and check you for us.
What is happening right now? This is a fucking. I got a balloon frozen on the screen, like permanently. Oh I my! Think,
Oh man!
Oh look at this! This is amazing. This is
truly amazing.
This fucking episode, amazing. Man, this is one for the record books. There will never be another episode like this, I can assure you guys.
It seriously looks like a ghost. Are we sure, like, you know, our computers are not, like, possessed, you know?
Had to unplug my camera. Back to the point that I was making about Ja'Marr Chase a couple minutes ago. So, basically, the point that I was making is that Ja'Marr Chase, thus far, QB19 and pressures allowed per dropback, 22 less than Pickett. On top of that, his rate of pressure dropbacks is QB31 in the league at 29%. So it's pretty low. So he's getting the protection. Mm-hmm. Justin Fields is at 47.4%. So 15 to 18% higher. But as you mentioned, his inability to move in the pocket has really affected this offense. And they're running out of shotgun way more, which has made life a lot more difficult. The other thing I wanted to mention was when you look at his time to throw over the past couple years, he's 0.3 seconds faster than he's ever been at any other point in his career right now because he's just got to let it rip. He's not mobile enough to let the deep ball develop, which is probably a big reason why we're seeing the lowered percentage of yards per attempt, amongst other things. But what I want to bring up about Burrow is in the context of the dynasty landscape, Joe Burrow is still a quarterback that I am heavily interested in. And I would right now, if there's anybody in your dynasty leagues that are lower on them, I would send a guy like Trevor Lawrence in a deal to get Joe Burrow. I prefer Burrow to Lawrence. Look at the weapons, look at the history, look at the ascension that we had seen from him. To me, if I could move off of Lawrence into Burrow with just this little hiccup that's going on, the T. Higgins stuff that's going on, I would roll that in. And even if I had to add a second to Trevor Lawrence, which they're very close, but maybe the guy on Burrow just wants to feel good about the trade. I doubt he's going to take a third. I would still heavily consider it because I think that Burrow, even though you're going to get diminished production this year, Joe Burrow is just a proven high upside quarterback with a lot left in the tank. The big thing about Burrow was we hadn't even seen him really, you know, dialing up the deep ball just yet in his career. That's like the big thing for me that I really wanted to see. But nonetheless, I don't think anybody should be concerned about the status and current state of Joe Burrow. The injury is going to throttle the 2023 production, obviously. But with that being said, I don't think we're ultra concerned about him in the long term, and nobody should be.
Absolutely.
So the next person I wanted to bring up on this list, because obviously they've like ascended to the highest levels of dynasty rankings over the past couple weeks, and that's Puka Nacua, who, you know, some people were very low on Puka. I think a lot of us were kind of in the middle. I mean, historically speaking, you look at a guy like this, doesn't have the immense athleticism, didn't have standout, you know, major collegiate production, played at a school that obviously, you know, BYU, not playing from like a top tier school. So I think there were a lot of reasons for people why they were off of Puka Nacua. But now through four games, we've seen a player that's absolutely carving up NFL defenses in a role that looks very similar to Cooper Kupp. So what's the story with Puka Nacua?
I mean, again, like you said, looking at his profile coming out of BYU, you know, athleticism, you know, subpar. He had a nice breakout age, 83rd percentile. Production throughout college, I mean, he couldn't eclipse over 800 yards. But again, like you said, he's in that position where he's playing in the slot, and it thrusted him into a position where he's through first four games, nobody else has ever done what he's done in receptions and yards. It's insane. I think the talent is at this point, you've seen enough games that we know that he's got legitimate talent. It's not just the role. I think the role plus the talent is an elite combination, hence why he's been so good these first four games. My concern would be is just obviously long term for the future, what Cooper Kupp impacts him for the rest of the year, at least for his rookie year, and then the years that left that Cooper has on his contract. But throughout, I mean, you can't deny the metrics. And the volume is there. The target share is unbelievable at 32%, 35% of the air yard share, and he's 24 points per game in fantasy. I you can't deny it. It's one of those guys that, you know, that there's traits that these NFL teams look at specifically that I think more advanced metrics can tell us, other than just these baseline athletic measurements. Were you dominant in college? He's got great size at 6'2", 210, and he's catching everything with a crazy target share. He's top five in catch rate as well. It's just, I mean, you can't deny the hands as well. So it's one of those things that it's just, it comes out of nowhere to us, to me at least, based off of, you know, the normal things that you look at for prospects.
Here's my take on it. Here's my take. And I am a historically well-known browbeater when it comes to late round, non-athletic, small school guys. Number one, that's all irrelevant now. Everything that I just said is irrelevant at this point. Okay, we're four games in. He's done, as you've mentioned, what nobody's ever done. He looks like Cooper Kupp in this role. Throw all that other bullshit out the window. What I will say is, the performances that we've seen from him and the talent level that he has displayed is undeniable within the context of this offense with Matthew Stafford. That's the important distinction to me because, you know, while Kupp is signed through 2026, you brought it up. He's got $17 million in dead cap in 2025, or I think 2024 is $17 million. 2025 is pretty high as well. I'd have to go look these numbers up. But basically, he's through 2026. So if your belief is that Puka Nacua, for some reason, takes some semblance of a backseat role to him while he's still on the field, then by the time Puka Nacua is, you know, or his contract is up, Matt Stafford is 38 years old. And here's my thing. When we look at Kupp prior to Stafford, he averaged 8.3 targets per game. 141 was his highest season-long total. The moment that he got with Matt Stafford, that number jumped up to 11.2, and he instantaneously had a 191 target season. That was 2021. The day that he got with Stafford, everything changed. But before Kupp, it was Calvin Johnson who routinely saw mega volume. He had multiple 150 target seasons. He had a 200 target season. Before that, it was Golden Tate. Then we saw Kenny Golladay do his thing at one point. So I don't want to say this to diminish what Puka Nacua has done, but Stafford is very clearly what once upon a time made Cooper Kupp go nuclear. And then again, as I mentioned, Stafford's 35 and a half years old. He'll be 38 by the time the dead cap on Kupp's contract is low enough for Nacua to just outright take this position. So if the theory is that Cooper Kupp is going to get hurt or he's going to get traded or he's going to get cut or you believe any of the above or they're going to draft a rookie quarterback, then so be it. It just seems that there happens to be a very strong correlation between certain quarterbacks and funneled wide receiver targets. So there's no guarantee that the next quarterback is going to be like Matthew Stafford. We're all shocked by CJ Stroud. Like, this is why, and we've talked about this a little bit on the other show, this is why Nico Collins has been fantastic, but if they draft an alpha wideout to this offense, that's the fucking guy you want to target because that guy is going to get 10, 12 targets a game. I mean, it's coming. You can see it in the profile right now of CJ Stroud. And I think that there's just some guys that, again, within the context of an offense, particular quarterbacks are just going to air it out. So I love what Nacua is doing. In fact, kind of wanted to go a little deeper. The interesting notes about him, very similar to Kupp. One of the big difference, though, from the yards after the catch per reception, average depth of target to passer rating when targeted, all look the same. One of the big differences, though, is that this year, 90% of Puka Nacua's targets have come between the short and intermediate parts of the field. While in Cooper Kupp in 2021, his biggest season, it was 73%. So 17% less than what we're seeing from Nacua. And that's because that year, Kupp saw 24.2% of his targets come behind the line of scrimmage. In 2023, Nacua has only seen one target behind the line of scrimmage. So he's not being used in the exact same manner as Kupp when it comes to the behind the line of scrimmage stuff, but everything else downfield looks exactly the same, and it's more potent as we've seen so far. So I really like him. Love him with Stafford. we've talked about this. Kyren Williams, not the most efficient player. We've seen New England supplement the run with the pass in the past. It's entirely possible that Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp are splitting 25 targets apiece week in and week out. That is a feasible outcome for these two players. So with that being said, I see his dynasty ranking, and I got to pull this up here. His dynasty ranking has him currently at what? The wide receiver 12? He's the wide receiver 12 overall today. Circumstantially, it feels a bit rich to me. And the only reason I say that is because we just haven't seen all the layers of this onion. We haven't seen the layer of the onion without Matt Stafford. We haven't seen the layer of the onion with Cooper Kupp. We haven't seen the layer of the onion with Kyren Williams running effectively and them just going, fuck, let's just keep running. Let's keep running. What do these different scenarios look like? I don't know. Does he deserve to be at the wide receiver 12? It's hard to say because of the production we've seen over 4 weeks. If that persists, if this is his career, well, he should be the wide receiver 1. So he's 11 spots too low if you believe this is the... It's weird, right? Like, it's... When you look at the ranking currently, this is just a really weird point to bring up. You stopped at 12. He's averaging an ungodly amount of target share and a godly amount of points. If you believe that's going to keep up, he should be the wide receiver 1. Or he should be just below Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. But he's not. Why is he not that high? Because you believe it.
Bring expectations, yeah.
Yes, and you only believe it as much as your human brain will allow you to believe it over the players that you've leaped him across. You're not doing it with Devonta Smith. You're not doing it with Olave or Waddle or Tyreek Hill or A.J. Brown. You're not. Why are you not doing it?
I don't know why. I mean, Devonta Smith is, you know, if you play the recency bias games, he has had some games where he's been super efficient, but then he's getting a low target share the last two games. It's one of those things where, yeah, I mean, why not Puka Nacua over Devonta Smith if you believe that the efficiency stays the same?
Sure.
Right? And it's just, yeah, it's like kind of the Devon A-chain. If you believe that the efficiency stays the same, where does it stop, right? At the top. And so, yeah, I think yeah, you look at some of these other guys and where they share these wide receiver rooms with other guys that are crazy efficient as well. And I think let's see what happens with Puka when Cooper Kupp comes in and see what that looks like. Because again, you can't deny the talent. It's evident that, you know, a lot of us overlooked there's some data metric, there's something in there that we didn't see within this guy. But again, you know, you referenced it already, and Adam Levitan said it best, is Matt Stafford remains a wide receiver kingmaker.
Yes.
Cooper Kupp, best wide receiver ever. Second best wide receiver season ever, Calvin Johnson. Kenny Golladay, top 10 wide receiver in 2018 and 2019. Yes. Golden Tate, 1,300-yard season. Marvin Jones, 3-9 touchdown seasons, 2017, 2019, 2020.
Yep.
Tutu Atwell is dominating as well. That's also another thing, is he's doing extremely well at 165 pounds. And then, yeah, and Puka Nacua, his next great gem for us all in fantasy is the best wide receiver through first four games ever by a wide receiver.
Yeah. I didn't see the Adam Levitan post, but this has been something on my brain, but that's exactly right. And it's totally poetic. And what's interesting is Puka Nacua is averaging 23.9 fantasy points per game. This is the arbitrary part of dynasty for all these people that want to tell you Puka's for real and this and that. Ask them why they don't have him as the wide receiver 3 in dynasty. And when they can answer that question, then you can say, okay, you've got full faith in Puka. Nobody would tell you to move him above these X, Y, and Z wide receivers because they know inherently there is a risk. Him making it up to 12 is arbitrary because we know that this could dissolve to where he's averaging 13 fantasy points per game. And Cooper Kupp is the dominant guy. So I don't know how it goes. And again, this is not to crap on Puka because he's been incredible so far, but it's a little slice of reality for people that are living in a fantasy world, pun intended, I guess, where a guy like this is going to persist 23, 24 fantasy points per game after Kupp is on the field and, God forbid, Stafford gets hurt. Because as Levitan mentioned, as I've mentioned here, yes, Matt Stafford is one of a rare few quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers. And this was why we loved Garrett Wilson coming into the year, because Rodgers is that funnel quarterback to his top guy. It was fucking written in the stars, And now it's not, unfortunately. All right. So that was Puka Nacua. Again, I don't own him in many places. The other thing I was going to say, for anybody that's taking victory laps on Puka Nacua, you show me the rookie draft where you took him in the first round, and I will give you the pat on the back and the trophy you deserve. All the people that are doing victory laps are like, I snagged him in the fourth and I snagged him in the fifth. It's like, well, that's good. That's where he was sitting. Michael Wilson was sitting in the fourth, in the third, right? So there were guys that fell. Puka Nacua, obviously dynamic ability. People grabbed him. But I see a lot of victory lapping, and I haven't seen one person show me a fantasy draft where they took him in the first round. If you knew he was going to put up 24 points a game, should have taken him at the, you should have taken 101, but you didn't. So, yeah. All right. That's probably going to ruffle some feathers, but this podcast has been off the rails the whole time.
We're possessed, and the ghost took over and was giving this all this.
Oh, no, I'll stand by this. Okay, next all one, right. And he has the craziest player image I've seen in a while. Sam Laporta of the Detroit Lions is one of the hottest names in fantasy football right now, especially in Dynasty, especially if you play in tight end premium leagues, because he has crept his way all the way up to, it looked like the other day, the tight end 2 on Keep Trade Cut. Alexander, what are your thoughts on Sam Laporta? Just assume that this is a tight end premium format. Let's say it's, again, 0.75, which is the nudge above 0.5, just below a full point. We'll say 0.75 to a full point.
I mean, you can't deny the athleticism, right? He got the draft capital, basically a first-round pick. It's 203, right? He gets the starting reps off the rip, right? He's managing that entire tight end role, which we never see, right? It takes, other than Kyle Pitts, right, who did his rookie year and has disappeared since then, not many of these tight ends get this full role where they get to be in on every snap. Like you said, a tight end leader in receiving yards, third in receptions, tight end 4 in yards after catch above expectation. He's tight end 5 in percentage of air yards. Tight end 6 in catch percentage. And that's with like having the second most targets as well. So his catch percentage is just amazing. I think he's the 4 games, and I don't really, I love my boy Jameson Williams. But I can't imagine losing some targets if this is the role that he's, you know, supposed to have right now. That I think that you can't deny that he should be in the top 3 conversation just after the production he's doing right now. And he's got the, you know, the pedigree. He has a lot of things that we all liked about him, right? It's not like Puka where there was a lot of things that we just, a lot of unknowns. We didn't know how well his production was because his production was low. You know, he had great production. He had a 25% dominator, which is 79th percentile. He had a decent breakout age, and then his athleticism was off the charts. So, and we know that one of the highest correlations for these tight ends, at least off the rip, is to have, you know, a high RAS score. I think he's fairly rated within that top 3.
Well, I know that having looked at our model currently, our model does love him as the trend has continued with his production. He's the tight end 2 overall currently on Keep Trade Cut. So let's start with some of the good. I don't know why I have to be this guy. I don't know why I always have to be this guy. Let's start with some of the good. So as you mentioned,
Someone's got a real sin. Here, come on.
Well, I've been doing that my whole career. So third most targets at the position, as you mentioned, number 1 in receiving yards, number 1 in yards per route run at the position at 2.3, tight end 4 in target share at 22%, yards per target is number 2, number 2 in total yards after the catch. Here's my thing, though. While he's number 2 overall in yards after the catch, he's also the tight end 11 in yards after the catch per reception. While he's the tight end number 3, in total targets, he's the tight end 20 in red zone targets with 1. While he's number 2 in yards per target, he's the tight end 22 in average depth of target. And lastly, while his production has been great, he's pass blocking at a rate of 10.5%, which is the 7th highest at the total position as I can bring up here. And this was something that I wanted to really talk about because, and this is sort of kind of funky right now, but he's at 10.5% currently pass blocking rate. I had sorted this by targets earlier. But the point is, when you look at some of these other players that have been more successful in the past, one of the hardest things at this position is to be a guy who pass blocks a lot and then get targeted downfield or get targets in general. Most guys that are pass blocking at a rate of 9, 10% or higher are often not clipping more than 6 targets in a game. You look at the career pass blocking averages of a guy like Mark Andrews, 1.3%. You look at Travis Kelce, 6.2%. The rarities are the guys like George Kittle who have pass blocked and been successful downfield, or TJ Hawkinson for that matter. And we could bring up some of these players while we're talking on the video because I kind of wanted to look at this. So you look at like TJ Hawkinson this year, for instance, pull up his pass blocking. So for instance, in this game right here, 13.6% pass blocking corresponded with the same game that he saw 3 total targets. The game that he saw 11 targets, he had a 1.9% pass blocking rate, right? I mean, this is, and we can go through this year over year, but the guys that are pass blocking at such a high rate are often not also the guys that are getting targeted heavily. So we can go to Laporta's profile as well, and I can show you the exact same factors that are at hand right now. But this is my semi-cold water on the Laporta rising to the top thing. I'm just concerned that he gets stuck in a role where the pass blocking ends up being too significant too often, and some of these opportunities go away, especially with, you know, Jameson Williams coming back into the fold. But again, look, Laporta, first game of the season, 15.6% pass blocking rate, 5 targets. Next game, 8.8%, 6 targets. Then look, 6.3% pass blocking rate, 11 targets. Then last game, 11.5%, back to 5 targets. So while everybody wants to get out in front of themselves on the Sam Laporta thing, it's like we're not looking all the way deep on some of these metrics, right? Some of the raw numbers are going to convince you that he's amazing, and he is good because we rarely see production like this from a rookie, but it's got to be taken in context. I would like to see him pass blocking less before I'm ready to crown him. I'm certainly not putting him over Mark Andrews. Not yet. There's just no way. But with that being said, if the pass blocking comes down, that's when I think I'll be a lot more excited in him, and maybe we will see that in the future.
Yeah, and again, like, yeah, that's a good point with the whole, you know, his pass blocking rate and how it could impact him. And again, it's 4 games, so we need a full sample to sure. to make a better assessment of what we see. But from the first 4 games, it's been incredible. And I mean, you know, you alluded to the 2 tight ends, Hawkinson and Kittle, the 2 guys that have kind of been able to, you know, work between the 2. Both of those guys are Iowa guys. I don't know how much, you know, the data correlates with those, but both of those, all 3 of these guys have come from Iowa and that Iowa system that's just basically churning out these, you know, elite tight end prospects. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Detroit is 4th in rush attempts as well. So it's one of those things where they potentially, it could be that they're so efficient at running that they run the clock out, and they're a good overall balanced team. It's not like the defense is too much of a liability that they have to be in these constant shootouts like they have in the past.
Yeah, I think you just hope that he is TJ Hawkinson, or yeah, that he's George Kittle, or yes, Hawkinson to many degrees, but you really hope that he's George Kittle if he's anything, because Kittle's been the guy, like, maybe it's to the highest degree, that has really performed exceptionally while also blocking 10, 12, 13% of the time on the field and still really perform. So as a safety valve, as a guy that can, you know, create yards after the catch, you really hope to see that. So, all right, now we're getting into some of our buys, Alexander, and we can rip through some of these players. But the first one that we want to talk about, we just watched the Seahawks play the other night. And for many of you that drafted this player, I put up a poll the other day and basically asked, like, how many of you guys expected Jackson Smith and Jigba to post more than 1,000 yards in his rookie season, 800 yards, 600 yards. Many people said that they didn't think that he was going to post over 1,000 yards, which probably would have been pretty difficult. I think it ended up being 800 yards is what most people thought. He's clearly very, very far from hitting that mark at this point in time. But Jackson Smith was a guy that before the season kicked off, after the draft, people had him as high as the wide receiver 10 in Dynasty. And now we find him sliding quite a ways back from there, Alexander.
Yeah, again, elite prospect, right? Elite college production, you know, teammate score, you know, with having to go play with, you know, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, you know, coming in, the talent was amazing. I think always the concern with being drafted in Seattle was the fact that Lockett and Metcalf were basically secure in their roles and they were efficient, you know, efficient receivers in this offense. Also not to take away from the fact of how many times they run three wide receiver sets, which is a low percentage within the league, and they're rushing. And then you alluded to this when we were talking about it, that concerning that in a game like this with the Giants, that the wide receiver one in the offense is getting a max of 7 targets. So they're not even passing that much at all. But the positives, he's wide receiver 2 in average separation. Now his ADOT is wide receiver at 48, but it's, if they could end up utilizing him, he is open a lot. So I think eventually long-term, I don't think this is a problem. I think right now the problem is just the fact that the incumbents in there are just as good. I think everyone assumed that it would just because Olave and Wilson were there, he just dominated in the open field, but he also had when he died on the ball to him. So it's one of those things where I think eventually down the line, hopefully they'll open up this offense. Lockett is getting up there in age. He'll eventually go and hit this. And hopefully we'll see that with this year. Within the slot, he's wide receiver 17 in targets as well. He's just not getting the volume, but he's open. And his targets that he's getting are significantly shorter than the rest of the league. So it's one of those things. Yeah, I think he's a buy, and because that he is open, and if an opportunity presents itself where he gets more time in here, and his snap percentage gets up here, I would like to see more of them trying to utilize him more on the outside and kind of change up the sets, but it feels like it's pretty defined roles of him exclusively being a slot receiver. Maybe throughout the season, they realize that they're not really utilizing his skill set, and they see that 4.6 average separation on literally every time he's out there. So I think he's a buy because the talent is there. And I think it, like you said, I think a lot of people were wish casting here that they were expecting. And I thought the talent was there, and I thought Seattle was so efficient passing last year with Geno entering the helm that they may open up this offense and kind of go pass heavy. And it seems like they're going to a balanced approach. And especially with Geno having an issue with his ankle or his knee, I think from that game, maybe they lead more into the run game, if not even more now. So yeah, that's my take, but I think the talent is there. I think it's one of those situations where he's not getting this insane volume and he's not getting a kingmaker like Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, and I know people have brought up the Amon-Ra St. Brown path of, you know, the first 11 games of Amon-Ra's career looked like he had 39 receptions for 352 yards and no touchdowns. He was averaging 4.7 targets per game. And then basically from that point on, he was averaging, looks like 11.2 targets per game, caught 51 balls for 560 yards and 5 touchdowns over the course of the final 6 weeks of the year. And so, yeah, you had this 70% of the season goes by and he's kind of okay, has some games in there where he's 6 for 70, 7 for 65. But those happened early on in the year too. And it's not like Amon-Ra St. Brown had any level of target competition to the degree that Jaxon Smith has. And guys, bear in mind, now you and I were really high on Zach Charbonnet, and I know people don't want to hear this, but Tyler Lockett's contract is locked in for a significant period. I think he doesn't have dead cap money to really get rid of him till at least the end of 2024. So he's going to be playing all the way through this year, all the way through next year. Yes, he is getting older, but he's been very healthy. Then we get to DK Metcalf, who's obviously signing his dead cap. Doesn't make him a free agent or pass the dead cap point till at least probably 2026. So this situation isn't great. And Amon-Ra St. Brown did not have this level of competition. But the point I wanted to make with Charbonnet is Charbonnet was a luxury pick for a team that had extra picks. Jackson Smith and Jigba could very well be a luxury pick with the mentality that, yes, we're going to probably have to pay this guy down the line, but we're going to get 5 years out of him with that extra fifth year on that rookie contract. And yeah, maybe 3 years from now, he becomes this monster wide receiver. He's only 21 and a half years old. But yeah, you might not see a savage Jackson Smith season till 2024, 2025. I don't even know. Without injury. Yeah. And again, this Seattle offense, they're not that potent. I think they're, what, 22, number 22 on the run and number, let's see here, let's look at it. Seattle this year, number 22 in rush attempts, number 24 in pass attempts. So it's not like this is a high-volume offense. And their fucking defense is incredible. So if that defense keeps playing well and that run game is as potent as it is, then they're really only throwing out of necessity to mix things up and make splash plays. And I don't think that this is going to reveal itself at this point. And again, I've seen people go, oh, look at the Amon-Ra St. Brown breadcrumbs. Follow them. It's like, not exactly. This is not the same offense. And again, Noah Fant's getting opportunity in this offense. So it's very deep. And we may come to a point where we realize Jackson Smith was more of a luxury pick. He's incredible. That doesn't change. It doesn't deny the talent. But the path to get there may be more circuitous to the finish line than many of us had hoped for. So that's my take on Jackson Smith. I think people need to temper expectation a bit.
I agree. I think, again, just temper expectations. But, I mean, his separation's there. I think the talent is evident there, you know, and all metrics that we find important about wide receivers. I just don't think the volume's there or the usage. If they're going to continue to run more, it's going to be way more two wide receiver sets. He's not even going to see the field. And if he does see the field, he's wide receiver 48 in average depth of target. So he's limiting what he can do.
It's really hard, man. And you look at where he is in the rankings. If you're an older team with Davante Adams, I mean, if you're rebuilding and you have Davante, I understand why you would want to just parlay that into Jackson Smith, but you're going to take a substantial hit on production. Like, I'm not saying Jackson Smith can't average 10 points a game, maybe. I don't, that would still, to be quite honest with you, be maybe high in the context of this offense. If you can rotate off one of these older players, there's no way you could take Deebo in a second and turn him into Jackson Smith. We just haven't seen enough games. If by week 15, he's still doing this, the problem with that is you then get closer to the end of the year where people just hunker down for winter. So the guy that has Jackson Smith that isn't that good, he'll be like, man, I'm just going to kick the can down the road and wait till next year and see what he does before I trade him. You got to kind of get in that week 8, week 9, opportunity where he hasn't done much. You put somebody of, consequence in front of this owner and say, that's what I want to make a trade for. You know, again, Drake London seeing a lot more opportunity. Clearly the wide receiver won in his own offense, even though the volume's not high. So it's a weird circumstance to be in. He is definitely a buy, but again, this is kicking the can down the road a little bit. Another player that we wanted to bring up, another player that's a buy, someone that you had added to the list for sure, and that's T. Higgins, who is currently sitting on Keep Trade Cut again, basically right next to Jackson Smith right now. T is the wide receiver 18. Go back in time just a little bit. T. Higgins was a top 10 guy probably about, what, maybe a year ago now? Let's see if we can sort this a year. Yeah, right there. A year ago, he was the wide receiver 7-8 on Keep Trade Cut. Now he's dipped all the way to the wide receiver 18. Obviously, we've talked about this year not playing to his best performance level. I think PFF actually has him graded out as the 110th highest graded wide receiver currently. Why is T. Higgins a buy?
Well, T. Higgins is a buy because he's a young elite wide receiver and he's proven he's done it. He's literally since his rookie year, if he was at 900 yards, if up to this point, if he would have hit 1,000, he would have had 3 consecutive 1,000 yard seasons. We've seen this guy do it. He's getting the volume. in terms of targets, he's getting the volume that we all want, right? Like, it's just that there's some issues overall with the offense as a whole. He's let's see, where was he at in volume? I think just it's one of those situations where I think he's wide receiver 14 in targets, but he's second to last in catch percentage. So I don't know what's going on. He didn't have this issue last year with crazy issues with catch percentage. I think it's one of those things where the offense is tied to Joe Burrow. Like it's a systematic cohesion with these guys. And if Joe Burrow's not humming, the whole offense is not humming. They can target Chase as much as they want just to try to get use his yards after a catch ability, but that's not in Higgins' game. And right now this offense is in a really crappy situation. It's just not very efficient at all, and we can't push the ball downfield, which is really kind of that contested catch deep ball is really the T. Higgins' game. I don't understand why he's dropping so low. It's four games. Maybe you lose potentially a season, but we don't know. He could this thing could get better over time. He's resting it and stuff like that. I think the team should rest Joe Burrow a little bit, but again, I think I'm not worried about T. Higgins. I would take all the T. Higgins I can get, because even if he doesn't get signed here, they don't sign an extension with him. That's they already said that they're not. He goes to another team, he's the number one on any other team.
It's true. And the big part of what we're seeing from him this year is a composition of injuries to Joe Burrow, injuries with himself. And this offense obviously looks terrible. I love T. Higgins. It's a player that I've always had an affinity for whatever reason, even though some people will tell you that he's a beta alpha. You know who you are. I'm not going to say any names. But when you look at the rankings currently, you look at where he's sitting, I guess the question would be, who are you giving up for T. Higgins? Are you giving up Zay Flowers for T. Higgins?
Yes.
You're giving up Zay Flowers. Okay. Are you Devontae Adams or T. Higgins?
That's a tougher conversation, I think.
I think at 31 years old, Devontae's still playing incredibly well. Again, there's a cliff somewhere. We don't know where it is. I think it depends on the context of the offense, but I think you could get T. Higgins plus something in an Adams deal, something smaller. You could put, you know, make that a bigger package. Devontae's amazing no matter who his quarterback is. So it's tough. We just know that there's an end in sight. The thing with T. Higgins is I don't feel like we've seen the peak version of T. Higgins in 4 years in the league. Again, missed time is in there, but he's never seen more than 111 targets in a season. T. Higgins is hitting 1,000 yards with just over, 100 targets in some seasons. So clearly the skills are there. Playing with Joe Burrow is a huge boon. I don't know if they're going to be able to pay T. Higgins. That's been one of the conversational topics with contracts that need to be doled out in the future in this offense. So T. may go somewhere totally different. How will he be in the context of that offense? I have no idea. I like T. Higgins. I think he has become a buy because of how far he has dropped based on his earlier pricing. I will say this. T. Higgins was viewed as a top 10 guy despite the athletic hurdles that people see, the style of winning on the field, and the fact that his teammate was already inside the top 10. What that tells me is if T. Higgins was to go to another team, let's say hypothetically Carolina, not that he will, they don't have the capital to pull it off. If he played well, he can just reascend back up towards the top 10. He's already been there once before. He's young enough. If the opportunity starts to go his way, he has it in the DNA to go back up. So it's production plus ascension of value. A lot of other guys don't have that. A lot of other guys aren't going to go up elsewhere because we've sort of seen who they are. Again, Calvin Ridley is a great example. He opened up week one, but even after week one, Calvin Ridley really didn't fly up that far. And I know there's an age difference here, but look at DJ Moore, right? Like if DJ Moore went to a place where the opportunity really revealed itself, again, maybe even a better situation than this, and there's a lot of them, DJ Moore has that ability to fly up to the top 10. So those are the kind of guys that I'm interested in. I can get the production, but they're going to have the value later as well. So that's why I agree, and I do like T. Higgins a lot. Next player on the list, probably have to rapid fire through some of these ones, but let's go with, you wanted to talk about Quentin Johnston. He's on the list. The people would love to hear about Quentin Johnston. Why is Quentin Johnston to you a guy that is a buy in Dynasty?
Well, so I think one of the things that's lacking from the Chargers offense is the yards after catch. You look at Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, and these kind of guys. I know Mike Williams is gone now, but what they had been lacking is really explosive plays and yards after catch, which really they kind of try to utilize basically Austin Eckler in that situation with these underneath targets and having him use the yards after catch to do it. That's really what the biggest part of Quentin Johnson's game is his yards after catch. I understand the issue with, you know, the catch rate and stuff like that and his issues with catching in college and stuff like that. But this is also a guy that where he was getting his yards per reception, 2020, 22.1 yards per reception, 21, 18.6 yards per reception, and then 2022, 17.8 yards per reception. He's 6'3", 208. He's got insane burst. He's got a crazy catch radius. I just think it's one of those things. And Justin Herbert is QB6 in pass attempts in 2023. He was QB3 in pass attempts in 2022. And Justin Herbert's also number one in deep targets. So Quentin Johnson, if they can utilize his skill set and he can get in this offense and they can make him an integral part of this, I think this is just growing pains of there. And I think if they can get him integrated in the offense and utilize his skills to the fullest, I think we'll see a whole different Quentin Johnson, especially in the context of this offense. There's concerns. There's obviously concerns. There's concerns with everybody's profile. But I think it's way too early to make these assessments on guys like Jackson Smith, on guys like Quentin Johnson. We don't know. Let's let have a whole year go out and say a whole year, basically a whole year, right? A whole season, maybe including the playoffs, the Chargers make the playoffs, that we see Quentin Johnson without Mike Williams. And if there's no usage in year one and he continues to get this low target share and Joshua Palmer, who, you know, has done well with his, you know, with his draft capital, with him being a sub athlete and a possession receiver, but Josh Palmer does not win in yards after catch. Josh Palmer is not a deep ball receiver. That's what Quentin Johnson wins in. And I'm willing to bet on the guy that has a great profile for that and on an offense that throws it a fuck ton.
Man. I will say this. I'm going to lead all of these off with, I will say this because I have no stance. The Chargers, as you mentioned, Justin Herbert is letting it rip this year. 74.6% wide receiver target rate, number one in the NFL. So the volume exists in this offense. Keenan Allen, as you probably alluded to, getting older. Mike Williams hurt again as the counselor paraded around and told everybody about. That's good. So I look at him and, you know, obviously he's a falling knife for many people. Right now he's a wide receiver 38 in Dynasty. And I would imagine if we were to go and look at the first round wide receivers, he's the lowest of all of them. But I think that that's because for people, he was always expected to be the lowest. He had the profile that didn't necessarily look like the guy that was a hit by some of the advanced metrics. And so, as usual, when these players don't perform, recency bias infused with actual bias really cakes a layer on these players. And that's why we've seen a guy like Quentin Johnson do this. Now, that doesn't preclude Quentin Johnson from having 7 giant games in a row and then finding himself like launching up all the way to a, you know, top 10 spot. Like it's entirely possible. Is it likely? Probably not from what we've seen thus far. But as you mentioned, if he doesn't do anything with the void of wide receivers in this offense, if he doesn't do anything with the opportunity that he saw recently, I think he ran 71% of the routes last week. So the routes are going up. The targets aren't there, but the routes being run are. And that's all you can really ask for at this point. I mean, I guess we could ask for targets. Would be nice. Nice little plus.
That would be nice.
But
come on, Justin.
But he's running the routes. So I'd like to see him next week. They put, look, as much as guys want to bring up Josh Palmer, they put a first round pick into Quentin Johnston. Whether it was the right or the wrong thing to do, they did it. And now they have to give him the opportunity to succeed or fail on his own. I watched the game last week. They were doing some sideline routes to him. And, you know, they were talking about how he couldn't pull it down in contested coverage. It's like, it's not the easiest play to make in the NFL. So he's not getting cherry picked opportunities like some other receivers. But I would like to see him develop. At the price tag of the wide receiver 38, I mean, if you've got Romeo Doubs and somebody wants him, I mean, they're aligned right now. They're basically the same value. I don't know what Christian Watson is just yet, but if we were betting on ceilings, I'm not necessarily holding on to Romeo like he's going to be a staple long term. I think we're getting so used to, which is odd, and maybe the NFL is changing, we're getting so used to some of these later round guys. Alan Lazard, now Puka Nacua is doing his thing. Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, we're getting contributors getting later in the draft or undrafted, and it's becoming more of a regularity. But I would tend to lean harder into history versus these abnormalities that we're seeing taking place. So I see why Johnston's a buy. I think there's a lot of concern already. And as you and I mentioned, and I still want to do this research, if guys haven't fired by a certain point, I don't think it means that they can never, air quote, break out. I just think it means that that ceiling starts to come down, that ceiling of expectation. I think you and I are going to validate this at some point. But my belief, and I think your belief as we've talked about it, is that if you don't do stuff in year one and you're kind of middling in year two, you're never going to hit that high ceiling that people had maybe seen for you outside of, again, guys like Davante Adams. But he cannot be held to the same standard of anybody else. So
I agree. And I think I just think it's so early to make an assessment, but again, it's not great. The targets are not there. The route participation's up. Let's see what he does the rest of the season and make a better assessment on whether or not he's likely to, you know, have the upside that we all thought he had with going into this offense. I would just rather throw something out there with someone who's probably, you know, spent a rookie first round pick on this guy, and maybe they're not interested in waiting. They don't want to play the wait game. They don't want to wait and see. They want to win now, and willing to move off of him for cheap. Because again, if he continues to stack games like this, he's going to continue to drop. So
yeah, yep. And it's very possible. Like next week could be. They don't play next week. They're on bye next week, I believe.
Yeah,
they're on bye. But so coming out of the bye, that will be the really interesting factor for
him
and the Chargers.
More time to integrate him into the offense.
It's just one more layer to the narrative of him not succeeding. If he comes out of the bye,
that hurts. I think that hurts, in my opinion. That's a big deal. Yeah.
If he comes out of the bye and flops again, oh baby, he may be falling outside the top 50. All right. Absolutely. Here's another player that was a former first-round pick that's doing some things similar to some other speedy players in the NFL that people are wildly in love with right now, and that is, of course, Jameson Williams. He is coming back this week, I believe. I think his suspension got shortened one game. He's back this week. Why is he a buy in Dynasty, and why should people have probably bought way before this conversation?
Should have bought him way before, I think, because number one, he's got the elite speed. He's got a crazy production. They drafted him with the 12th overall pick. Now, I mean, they also drafted the pick. So
yeah.
All the Gibbs managers out there are like, oh, what about that? But Goff is QB1 in adjusted completion on deep targets. It's like 64.5%, I believe. And this guy is a monster in the deep routes. So he had 1,500 yards. His game is the deep targets, and I think that's just the part of the offense that they've been using. Maybe Josh Reynolds, maybe he fights with touches with that, but this is a guy that's got elite speed. Maybe the catch rate is rough. I don't know. We'll have to see. But he hasn't played a lot. So he's played a few games last year. He got suspended. We saw him in preseason. He didn't have a great preseason. But we've seen guys not have great preseasons and break out. Everyone likes to reference Ja'Marr Chase. He had all the drops, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, you should be worried about Ja'Marr Chase. This is ridiculous. He's not catching anything. And then all of a sudden, he's the wide receiver two in Dynasty. I'm not saying that Jameson Williams is that guy because he's fighting with Amon-Ra, but there's a void in this offense in the deep ball, and this is the number one offensive line, right? They've got a great run game. Goff is playing out of his mind. Goff's efficiency as a deep ball target, he was QB5. He's QB5 currently in deep the targets. And throughout the years, he's always been in top five, top 10 within deep targets. I just think this is, again, one of those situations where this guy wins in the deep parts of the field. And if you want a guy that can kind of look like the Tyreek Hills and the Waddles, the guys that have this speed that can make the most with the least, I think Jameson Williams has this kind of ability. I'm not saying he's like that. And Will Fuller is a really good comparable player for him, where being super efficient with the speed and stuff like that. But he was also known for really good route running as well in Alabama. So I guess we'll have to see. He hasn't played a lot of football because he missed a lot with the ACL injury. But he's a buy to me because, I mean, he's just oozing with talent. The upside is incredible. And Goff is a great deep ball passer. And he's throwing downfield a lot.
So Jameson Williams, currently the wide receiver 36 on Keep Trade Cut, sitting right next to Marquise Brown. I mean, for the guy that's holding on to Jameson, if you've got Marquise, if you want to move off, if you believe in Jameson enough, tough play because Marquise Brown has been so good. But one of the things I do want to bring up about Jameson Williams in the context of this Detroit offense, Detroit's one of the most run-heavy teams in the league currently, but I actually think that that's because the dynamism of this offense has not been fully unlocked. I believe that this is one of the players that they believe is going to get them there, just like they believe that Jahmyr Gibbs, to many degrees, is going to also be a player to get them there. The reason I say this, though, the Lions are tied for 7th in the NFL in deep ball pass attempts at 14, but they're the number 23 offense in the league at deep ball pass attempt rate at 10.7%. So they're actually not attempting that many deep balls relative to other teams, even though they've attempted 14 so far. And that's very likely because when you look at this offense, Amon-Ra St. Brown runs a 4.66. Josh Reynolds, 4.52. Khalif Raymond 7 years ago ran a 4.39. So you've got Jameson Williams, who's the only burner in this offense. And as you and I have talked about off air, everybody's infatuated with Devon, A-Chain, whatever he's changing his name to. Again, I get issued some grace here to get it right in the future. But everybody's into this player who's this one-touch speed player, can break off something to the house on any given play. Well, we have already seen Jameson Williams in rare opportunities in the NFL. His only career catch was a 41-yard bomb. His only rush attempt in the NFL was a 40-yard rush attempt. So this guy is doing a lot of what you love about Devon Achane, but he's a wide receiver, and he's currently the wide receiver 36 on Keep Trey Cut. So yes, he comes back very soon. I wrote an article on Patreon just recently. I included him. I included some trade options for people that want to look at some deeper analysis on what I think you should send for him. But yeah, I think you're right. I think we're sitting at this point where it's kind of crap or get off the pot for the people that want Jameson Williams, because if he comes out this week and again, lifts the lid on a defense and has, even if it's 3 catches for 96 and a score, like, boom, he's going to go right back to where people had him sitting for months and months and months when he was idle. He was like the wide receiver 15 or 16 for literally months, even when he was going through rehab and suspension issues. Like, he didn't move, and now he's kind of slid for no apparent reason other than the preseason, some drops, some unsightly mistakes. And again, that's the bias in people's head that they've layered on top of him. And we really haven't seen him play yet. And I think, again, for all of us that have played Dynasty as long as we have, when you're 2 years in the league and you've hardly played so far, that oftentimes, my statement I made many times before is, more time away from the field doesn't make you a better football player. So he really needs to step back into this role and play incredibly well to earn the confidence of Dynasty players again, but one good performance and he's going to skyrocket. I don't know if we're going to go into another player right now, Alexander. No, no, you know what? I changed my mind. We're going to talk about this other player, this quarterback, on the next episode, Alexander. We're having some connectivity issues. The episode's approaching the longest length of an episode we've ever put together. So I want to leave a little bit in the chamber for next week's episode. Guys, if you like the show, if you're listening on Apple, if you're listening on Spotify or watching, make sure you rate and review the show. It definitely helps us climb the rankings. If you guys are on YouTube, make sure you hit like, comment below on what you agree and disagree with. Tell us some of the players that you think are dynasty buys. Hit the subscribe button before you leave as well. In the description, you guys will find a link for the Discord server if you guys want to join that. It's a growing Discord server, very active group of individuals. I love everybody over there. It's always a fun time. We have regulars. It's really weird to have built a community with like regular people there and you just know them by name at this point. Lastly, DynastyRankings.com. Guys, go over there, put in your email. I'm sure you guys will see an email at some point in the future as that website continues to get a bow put on it. Alexander, thank you for doing the Lord's work and fighting through connectivity issues or whatever it is that you're dealing with over there. And we will be back with you guys next week, same place, same time. And we will drop that quarterback that we did not drop on this episode. See you then.